Welcome to the Fair Parenting Podcast, where we cover people's stories, ideas, and the progress towards fair parenting.
Welcome to the podcast. Today is part three in my story update. Thanks again to Brent Bowlby for agreeing to do the interview. We'll pick it up just before the end of part two, which was the last episode. Here we go. It's, the
trauma, 7 years of trauma, you know, and I know fighting false allegations is very, very hard, but I have, and I overcame them and got them proved false. But I'm sure you know that it leaves a scar. But if even for everything, and I've said this many times in court, I don't care. I'm not, I've got no grudge. I'm not an aggressive, nasty person. I just want peace and safety. And if she messaged me tomorrow and said, look, let's just draw a line. Let's just pair it. I'm not going to come after you anymore. And let's just draw a line and carry on. I'd probably say okay, but I am so worried at this stage that, you know, if we could get a watertight court order, I probably would say okay, because I'm not into fight. It's like there's one person fighting, you know. The court has never found that I've done anything wrong in 6 years other than flee to safety. And that's it. I've got no interest in attacking her or, you know, I never did when she broke the court orders. If she's in jail or if she's fined for breaking a court order, that affects my child. So I wouldn't do it. I said that earlier, you know, but she's got no reservations in trying to destroy me, you know. So it is very scary, the 7 years of that. And I'm sure, you know, as well as or more than I do.
Well, you know, I've faced very similar things. I know, you've got the sort of criminal twist.
Yes, we can speak about
gagging,
that.
You know, the gagging order from, you know, March to silence you. You know, I actually have stalkers assigned to me that follow me on social media that yes. End up in false affidavits to be used against me.
Yep.
And as you know, you speak on this very same podcast as the host, and I appreciate you allowing me to sort of sit in your chair today and ask you questions as the guest host. But it's hard when people don't understand that these struggles in the family court system and criminal court or civil court is so bad. And it's not just one place, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, our kids are at the heart of this.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what makes this so difficult. You've said your ex hasn't called your child in months.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've missed so much time with my kids. There's this chaos, you know, and the safety risks. And I'm sure that, you know, I've witnessed my own feelings when I hear police cars driving past my residence. Mm. I feel almost like my stomach doing flip-flops when I hear that.
Yeah.
Because immediately what comes to mind are the false, you know, accusations, the serving of legal documents at my residence.
Yeah.
All of these negative emotions tied with, you know, the thing that is supposed to provide safety and, help. And that is, the officers who are supposed to serve and protect are the ones serving these documents that are absolutely full, you know, filled with falsehoods, and nobody cares.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, and knowing the fact that your ex hasn't called your child in months, how has that affected your bond with your child? Is she mad at you because mom's not calling? Is she relieved that mom's not calling? I'll say one thing before you answer is your demeanor is certainly one of reconciliation, forgiveness. I would, and I heard you use terminology or something to the extent of, or a sentence like, I wouldn't do this to her. And yeah. I feel that same thing. It's like, this is so awful of what men go through. And, but I don't have it in me to lie, cheat, steal, and prevent my children from having as many people love my children as possible, including, the maternal side of the family. And I'm certain that we could amicably come to an agreement, but they don't want to, and they are breaking the law. You're sort of in the same situation. How has that affected your bond with your child?
Well, firstly, I think I've heard people say, and I don't know if it's true, that abusive types of people, they look for our personality types, the type that can be abused and won't hold a grudge and will try and fix things. I don't know if that's true, but I've heard it said quite a few times. I'm going to answer what you've just asked, but I'll be criticised for it. No effect whatsoever. The baby, well, so it's not a baby now, but no, hardly ever mentions the other party. Maybe once a month or... I don't know why that is the case.
Let me throw this in there, and I'm sorry for interrupting you.
Yeah.
That's common.
Is it?
Oh, very much so. During a 2-week period of time, when I was alone with my children.
Yeah.
I will say that they had absolutely zero, not even asked one time to contact the other parent.
Okay.
And so, I think that it wasn't because of, let's just say, I think what you just said is pretty common.
Right.
But of course, it wasn't from you not wanting the child to contact the mother. Did you ever encourage the child, say, hey, maybe we should call mom
No, because if she's not, because I message on the Talking Parents app and I say, please send a Zoom link if you want to speak at this, the shed.
She didn't even want to talk to the child, is what you're saying.
No. What I did, I forget the context now, but a few weeks ago, I actually, and I think it's still on X, I put a couple of pages from Talking Parents up on the internet. I think I was being stalked by one of her friends. There's a nutty character that stalks me. And I put two of the Talking Parents pages where it just said, I think it was about 12 occasions where I was saying, please send a Zoom link if you and nothing. And then every few occasions it would log that the other party had read the messages, because that's what the Talking Parents app does. It shows you when it's been read and it logs when a message is sent. I think I said on the post, she's taking her child's house, but she doesn't even want to call the child. And it seems strange to me that that coincided. December she got the order to take the child's house, and the child now, she now just more and more cool. Going back, in the past, I have, there's been occasions where the child hasn't wanted to be in a call, and I've, again, on Talking Parents, I've said, let me have 5 minutes, I'll chat to the child. And the child's then gone back and had a half an hour or an hour with good conversation. I mean, children are like that. Sometimes they need a bit of encouragement. It's nothing to do with them not wanting to talk to their other parent. So I've tried. One thing I did do was I did stop the calls in May 24 when she cancelled the child's passport. Because at that stage the aggression was building, and the sanctions and the hostility. I didn't cut it when she got me a jail sentence. I didn't cut it when she froze my house and bank account. I didn't, because that's to do with me. But when she cancelled my child's passport, I said, no, this is about the child. I think there were regional tensions going on at the time, and I felt it was an important safety issue that the child should have a passport. So I did cut them then for several months because, you know, she didn't care, or she didn't, you know, it was just no reaction really. And we kept going to court and she would say, well, yeah, he's not doing this. And I would say to the judge. But then after a few months, I think it was October, so it was, there was a 5-month period where I did stop the calls. I'm not going to hide from that. I've given my reasons. But in October, I relented. We still didn't have a passport, and I was very worried about that because by then the Irish guy was on the scene and I felt we were in danger. But I let the calls resume because I just want her to have both parents, you know. Again, she hasn't sent a birthday card or a Christmas card to her child. She's on a couple of occasions, not more than a couple, because we record the calls, both parents record them, and she's tried to upset and unsettle the child. And I've played this to the judge a few times, and now the court order has in it that she's not allowed to upset the child on the calls. But then she did it Christmas. I think it was Christmas Day. Christmas Day we had a call, and she did it again. I don't know what to say really. So I have tried. I'm very honest person, you know. So I did cut the calls, and I've given the reasons. But aside from that, I want. You know, we should be parenting in England with a safe court order, and that's what I want, but she doesn't.
Wow. So, you know, I feel so connected to you through this. You know, it's like we're in the same storm, but in different boats.
Yeah.
I can relate. I spoke with my kids up until the illegal withholding every night, every single night. And when my children were with me, I encouraged them to call their mother and say goodnight and foster that relationship. And you not only encouraged your ex to send you Zoom links so she could maintain a relationship, albeit, you know, from another country, but it was at least over video. And I will tell you, back in, Microsoft's their Skype came out, you know, I did a lot of traveling. This was many, many years ago.
Yeah.
And I would have video calls. And when you're gone in Japan and I'm talking to my children in Minnesota, that video is so... I think many people who don't travel and speak to their kids, I mean, at least that video makes it feel like you're right there, and you can see the emotions on the faces, and that's critical to maintain that parental bond. Yeah. You tried that, she never reciprocated, is what it sounds like to me. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, I've offered, going back to last May, I offered to pay for her to have flights to come out and have visits, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, but you know, we've got an agreement to go back, but three times she's agreed and she's not interested. I'm not trying to withhold the child, and I said, look, in the meantime, I'll pay for your flights if you want. It then turned out she's done a few GoFundMe pages, and I don't ever look for her on social media, but a friend said to me, she's got a GoFundMe page with a video on. I think this was around last summer, and she was actually here. And I thought, well, that's strange, because I'd offered to buy her a plane ticket. She'd obviously gone back at that point and put the video up on GoFundMe. And I thought, well, how strange, because she didn't. You would have thought that if she was in town, that she would say, can I see our child? Just message, can I see it? But she didn't. So she flew all the way out here, hours on a plane, made some video, and then flew back. I don't know how long she was here. I'm guessing that's probably when she went to the local police. But she never contacted me to say, can I see our child? Which it's just so, there's so many things about this case that is just bizarre. You know, her going off to the jail sentence and her child's house, when any parent would want their child to have a house to inherit. And if you've got a deal there that you spent weeks on to allow you to parent back in your home country that you came to 16, 17 months ago, why would you throw that away in order to target the parent? I can only assume that she cannot control her anger. And that's probably true. I mean, I know that's in her medical notes she's got anger issues from before I met her. I haven't gone into a medical report because I don't, you know, I'm still considerate. I'm trying to present the facts of that there's been abuse, but I don't want to go into the nitty gritty of the medical. There's a lot of medical issues that I haven't talked about with the other parent. That I, in my view, kind of explain what's gone on. And I think it's very, very inept of the professionals and the courts not to behave differently given the medical history.
That's a brilliant point, because, you know, let me just stop right there. You know, it's not like the courts don't have the medical histories of the parents in high conflict divorces or child custody cases. And, you know, that seems pretty standard operating procedure, at least in the U.S., to have many courts in these embroiled in these family, you know, contentious cases to have these in-depth psychiatric evaluations done. I know I've had it done on myself. My ex also, it sounds like you and your ex also had this done. So it's not like, you know, the courts, if they just do their job and just read, and, you know, it's usually right there. They can make, that they can understand maybe how off balance one parent is versus the other.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like they really care to do much of any actual investigative work on their own, or reading a written closing statement that spells it out for them.
Yeah.
As in my case, when they're like, oh, I don't even remember that you were considered alienated. Well, it's like, well, how in the world could you not know that, since that is part and parcel to this whole entire case and why my children, you know, are acting the way they are. But, you know, you have a gag order since March, I believe, to hide. I think what I think you described it earlier as some of the criminal acts, you know, that if I remember, no, I know, let me rephrase this. I remember reading a post, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the high court's judge's email proved that he didn't allow the criminal acts of like breaking and entering and theft of your home. Right. It is just something she unilaterally did on her own.
Yeah.
And so my question is, you know, what could the legal consequences be for your, you know, the co-parent and her solicitor, and why hasn't that stopped them?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I've asked them, is this part of the legal aid? Is this state funded that they're committing these criminal acts? Because the thing is, people have said to me that this case is being enabled by the state funding. She's been allowed to say yes and no to the agreement three times because she's not paying for the legal. You know, if somebody was paying for lawyers each time for 15 hearings in the last 18 months, they would have probably accepted what the mediated agreement they made and not flip-flop and say, I want him jailed, I want a hearing for this, I want a hearing to take the house. They wouldn't have the money or the, you know, just the time and effort to do it. But because it's state-funded at this point, she can just... It's money at her whim. It's like a slush fund. We had the hearing on December 2nd where the judge said, take the house. Now, we were drafting the order for a few days. December the 5th, they broke into the house. Her solicitor hired a locksmith to break into the house. My barrister emailed the judge, senior barrister, saying, I question the legality of this. The judge didn't do anything. He should have done something. We asked for him to put something in the order to stop them harassing the tenant, because her solicitor had harassed a previous tenant, it was a lady who was looking after the house. So I knew that he had he was very aggressive. And so when we found out he'd broken into the house or sent a locksmith to do that, we said to the judge, we want something in there to stop this escalating. And the judge didn't do it. He was drafting the order. He could have done it. He didn't. So then we had 2 months where the tenant was being harassed by the solicitor, and we have the emails. He's been threatened. We're taking you to court and you're going to get the court costs against you. You know, financial threats, not physical threats. You know, and then he was given 2 weeks to vacate the property, otherwise bailiffs would evict him. Now, in England, you can't do that. You need a court order to evict. And again, I kept emailing the judge's clerk saying, I don't think his order allows this, because if it did, there'd be no squatters in England. There'd be no tenant-landlord disputes, because the landlords would be just going to the court saying, can you confiscate my house for 2 weeks and give it back to me? And I'll just go and evict this guy. That doesn't happen. So you've got to go to court and have a proper hearing to evict somebody. Now, this solicitor didn't do that. He knew he didn't have the rights to do it. But I asked the judge... four times over, the tenant was evicted on the morning of Tuesday, the 6th of February. So I between December the 5th, when he first broke into the house, until beginning of March, about March the 10th, I had emailed the judge four times asking him, does your order allow intimidation of this tenant and does it enable eviction of this tenant? And the judge evaded answering. I've got emails from his clerk that show this. Finally, in March, a month after the eviction, what was happening was the tenant was still being denied access to pick up his belongings. So it's theft at that point. You know, he's saying, can I have my belongings? And the solicitor is either not answering him on occasion, or he's saying, well, no, we need receipts for everything. Well, the tenant's got, I mean, I'm sure nobody has receipts for all their goods. So he was being refused for over a month. I then emailed the judge and I said, can you please confirm, you know? And the judge said, oh, you can bring it up at the next. I said, I think this guy's been evicted illegally and he should be allowed back, or he should be allowed to have his goods, and this is not happening. And the judge said, oh, you can bring it up at the April hearing with another judge. So he's expecting this guy who's been evicted to wait another month to either get back into the house or to get his belongings. I mean, I felt this was incredible from a high court judge, you know, and bear in mind we hadn't even had the transcript. He hadn't bothered to make a judgment. Haven't had the transcript at this point, but the eviction's gone ahead. I then emailed the clerk and I said, I can't believe that an evicted tenant is being asked to wait for a month to ask a judge who isn't the judge who wrote the order. And I said in desperation, I said, look, please can I escalate this if, you know, I want to ask one more time, just a simple clarification, can I escalate it if it's not forthcoming? At that point, the judge said, No, my order didn't allow eviction. So a month after the eviction happened, at the fifth time of asking, bearing in mind that the judge knew there was a break-in on the 5th of December that his order didn't allow, and he'd been kept up to events about the intimidation and the eviction, a month later he confirms at the fifth time of asking that his order never allowed any of that. And this is a High Court judge.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, I know obviously when you fled the UK, the family home, obviously it sounds to me was rented out. And now, you know, it's not just you and your daughter, but yet there's another person now who is in the tangled web of lies, deceit, you know, wrongful acts or straight out law breaking.
Yeah.
And I find that is usually the case when it comes to really, you know, contentious cases such as yours and mine. Quite frankly, it's like the number of people who get hurt aren't usually just, you know, the dad and the child. It's almost everyone connected to, you know, one degree of separation, 2 degrees of separation, that they get hurt in this. And it could be a step brother, step sister, never sees their younger half sibling.
Yes.
Or it could be like in your case, you know, not only did this renter or this tenant get kicked out and in the most awful way, but it also removed a source of income to you and the ability to, I imagine, contribute to being able to live and raise and take care of your daughter. So, it also really sort of strikes at the heart of, you know, I think your ability to even maybe live. Live at least in a normal, you know, standard of living way. Is this, am I accurate in that? Has that affected you?
Clearly, I mean, if you're denied the rent money, et cetera, your income is not what it would be. And, you know, if you're denied access to your bank accounts in England, then yes. And I would say, what do the court and the mother care? They don't care. I've emailed when the mother took our child 3 hours away without court approval. I can't believe the nerve now, but she said, can I have more maintenance? And I doubled it. And that's because, again, I was focused on the child. You know, at this stage, I'd had false allegations. I was now having to travel 6-hour round trips to see my child. But it doesn't matter to me. You know, it's what's important for the child. You need more money for the child. If I've got it, I can pay it. And then she started with the sexual allegations and all sorts. And then we went through the trial and everything else. And I never deducted a penny from that in all that time, because she was attacking me. I'm not going to lower the maintenance on my child because she's attacking me. It's like when she froze the bank accounts, I didn't cut the calls. You know, a few friends said, I would just walk away, don't let her have any calls. And I was like, no, you know, it's important, you know. Yes, she was attacking me, she froze the house and she got me a jail sentence. But I was like, I'm not going to stop calls. And so I was trying to be constructive and I was trying to mediate. And all I want is for 6 years, I've just tried to be constructive. I forget where I was going with this now, but I forget the question, but...
I think, especially when you, with your case, you know, you have mentioned, you know, how there's a public interest angle to your story.
Yeah.
And, you know, without spilling what you can't, you know, why do you think this story needs to be out there for other UK parents? And I imagine...
Yeah.
Just describing what you have, I resonate with, and I'm not in the UK. So, you know, why is there a push to get this story out or the interest in your eye?
Well, I just remembered your last question. It was about the finances, and so what I was going to say is, so I always finance, even when I was being attacked and abused for years in England, but I never asked her to be sanctioned. Conversely, she's asked me to be sanctioned, jail, bank accounts, house, etc., and she's cut us off from my own money. She's shown no concern about that. She's as I say, we could be in a car crash, and for all she knows, we'd have no medical care, no concern. And I've mentioned this to her. I've not asked for money, but I've said, you know, please don't cut off my money for her, because for all you know, you've cut off my bank cards. For all you know, we could need a bank. A bank card is sometimes what you use in an emergency, you know, and some places don't take cash, and some places, you know, you might not have enough cash until you get out the card. And she's left us without that. So it's reckless, as I said earlier, and she's shown no concern whatsoever. And it's, again, that's really a red flag and very worrying. She just wants us back. She wants me in jail. And she's not calling our child. She didn't send a Christmas card. I offered to pay for her flights out here, and she didn't take me up on it. She came here under her own steam and didn't ask to see our child. She could have been parenting for 16 months in England and didn't want to. She's hired this mad Irish guy for, I don't know why, because we've got an agreement. And she's taken our child's house, impoverishing our child for life, possibly. For what purpose, other than to just destroy me? And I've asked her many times over the years, you know, what have I done? And she can't say. She can't say. In public, you know, on this one of her GoFundMe pages, she said she'd been abused for years, but she never says anything specific, you know. Because there is nothing specific. A court's been through it, social services, the police, nobody's found anything, because there is nothing. I don't know why, other than her going back to her medical notes, I don't know why she's targeted me, other than the judge said she don't want you to see the child. But this level of aggression, that even the child is being hurt and possibly put at risk through her cutting off finances for 16 months, cutting the passport. It's frightening that she would do that to her own child. But no, you try getting the court to appreciate that.
Yeah, you know, I think what you just stated is, you know, again, I hear it quite often, and there really is, seems to be, you know, different outcomes based on, you know, whether you're the mother or the father, at least in many cases. I know in my own state, it's considered a mother state. And really what that means is that most of the time, the mother is going to get full custody, shared co-legal with the father, and then the father's going to get custodial time visitation you know, every other weekend or what have you. But it's certainly not a fair system, and you know, and what you're describing is really, you know, really quite horrific. Right now, you know you are in a very precarious position. Yeah. You don't have, you, the family home is, I presumed, you know, sold or unable to provide you an income as it did. You have a criminal charge that the judge has put on you. And your ex seems to be amping up the rhetoric, and it sounds like you've been misrepresented, quite frankly, over and over again. What, you know, you've I think you even asked the court for a protective order based on what you both agreed to, mediation, but they won't do it.
No.
You know, so You know, so what's stopping them, and how could that simple step have changed everything for your safety?
Yep. Well, that would have done everything. That would have fixed it. That would have resolved the whole case. But they won't do it. Even my barrister, he's a very senior barrister in England, in December, said, he knew the judge. They know England's a small place. He knew the judge socially, I think, and he knew her solicitor socially, and he said, I'm going to try and get the judge to write the order based on what you agreed. No luck. He said they're not going to do it. So I don't think they're ever going to do it. I don't know. England has, since we've been away, England seems to have fallen off a cliff. You see people being jailed for 3 years for a Facebook post and let out if they're a machete wielding criminal, and if they're a paedophile, well, they don't get to jail. So it's just, and they've been criticised all around the world and in the White House and everywhere, the social media, the English courts are being mocked, which makes it very frightening for me, because if I went back, they might say, well, we don't like these tweets you did, 3 years in jail. And, I just want to correct something you said. It's not a criminal thing that it is still purely civil. It's called a civil committal, which is civil contempt jail time. So I wouldn't have a criminal record. But again, that then begs the question, well, what are they putting me in a high security prison cell for?
Sorry for that, Miss. I completely agree. It's an unusual thing.
Yeah, it's.
Is that one of the reasons why? That just seems. And no wonder I got it wrong. I believe I got it right. Yeah. Second time I got it wrong.
Yeah.
Because it just seems so. So out there. I can understand how. If you have a stipulated court order and the other parent is not, I could see something like that. But is this one of the reasons why you want the public to know about what your case is about to help affect change? I know that there's so many horror stories like. Yours, I think yours is a little bit unique, a little bit different.
Yeah,
it's almost like you're trying to communicate or at least overly resolve these issues.
Yeah,
and after multiple attempts, it's like you're just getting nowhere. And so, is that why you want other people to know this? Because other parents might be in your same situation. And again, you've interviewed so many parents. Do you see a parallel between what you're going through and maybe some of the other guests you've had on your podcast?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. The flaws are so glaring in the system and so common. You can't help it. And I've heard somebody say before that a lot of the worst countries are the ones linked to Britain historically, such as India, Australia, America. What's the common link there? Well, they all go back to English common law, I guess. I don't know if that's the reason, but they seem to be worse than some of the European countries. There's a bit of background. Elon Musk came out a few months ago and said nobody should go to jail for civil contempt. There is a case of a guy probably, I think he's well known worldwide now, a guy called Tommy Robinson in England, who was jailed for 18 months for civil contempt. He's been put in solitary confinement. It's come to light that Elon Musk is funding some of his legal fees. There was an appeal against the solitary confinement last week, and the courts upheld the solitary confinement. for what I think is ridiculous reasons that went worldwide. Now, as I said, the English courts are being mocked at the moment on a world stage. Now, that's not my fault. I'm not the one jailing people for 3 years for a Twitter post. I'm not letting out paedophiles or not sentencing paedophiles. And what is happening in England is so worrying. And, you know, prominent politicians worldwide are saying this is not me with an axe to grind. But it's amplified my worries about in my case, because I was worried about the other parent and what's happened in the last 18 months has given good evidence as to why I'm worried. But I'm now also worried about the legal system and the judiciary in England, because if I go back, they could just throw away the key, sling me in jail, throw away the key. And if they can jail this Tommy Robinson man and put him in solitary confinement for civil contempt, and even Elon Musk can't help him, and the courts do it on a worldwide scale when they're getting criticised worldwide for what they're doing, what chance does a little guy like me stand? They could quite easily just, I could, you know, not be seen for years and years. So it is worrying. I'm not the only one to raise fears about the courts in England over the last year. I didn't know this was going to happen, you know, when my case started. It's just a weird thing that's emerged at the same time. You go back 2 years, nobody was criticising the English courts on the scale they're doing now. So I partly want to publicise it as it is part of a theme that's playing globally, and also to show my fear. I mean, obviously that will form part of a case that the mother says she wants to bring a case abroad now. I don't know whether she will or not, but that would obviously be a fear that's played to the court here that, you know, I could be persecuted if I go back. And that's not in the child's interests. So that, but also what I said earlier, that me and you and other people that have been on my podcast and other podcasts, there's not many of us that have gone this far through the system and can live to tell the tale. And it's important because things need to function better. I don't think it's going to help us, but it might help the next generation. And so it's worth doing, because if we don't speak up, nobody's going to know, and they need to know.
Wow. You know, it's so eye-opening, and I hope people who are listening are just taking in exactly what you just got them saying. You know, I am so grateful you're speaking out, even with a potential gag order or maybe even being accused of, you know, breaking other orders or what have you, making your life even more difficult. You're an incredible human being that just keeps marching forward and hasn't given up. And so your resilience, you know, is amazing. Yeah, you know, obviously, I, you know, normally talk to men that don't have their child.
Yeah.
And you know, and you have your child. And, you know, so, you know, I can understand how people might consider me a hypocrite for, if they don't listen to this podcast and go, why are you advocating for a man who's got a child keeping away from his ex? But in reality, that would be such an incorrect way to describe what you've done and how you've tried to manage this and resolve this any way possible. And yet, the very system that's designed to help resolve these issues make them worse in many cases. In this case, rather than resolving this years ago like you wanted,
it's,
you know, now you're looking at a jail sentence.
Yeah.
And to me, that is a little bit like such a, you know, a punch to the gut. But, you know, I know that we've been talking now for a little bit, and I want to basically just touch on a few more things to maybe draw this conversation to a close. And again, before I do, I just really find your story compelling because, you know, you're talking about a story that is similar, but you're sort of, I think that you can see both sides quite clearly because you were on both sides. You were alienated as a father.
Yeah.
When your daughter was born, and then you, and then because of those certain issues that were going on in your relationship, you became the protector.
Yeah.
And I have to, you know, just from my personal perspective, give you a lot of credit because, you know, a lot of men would say they would flee the country to protect their children. Hardly ever any do.
Mm.
And give up everything in the process.
Yeah.
And then rather than being applauded for this, because we know mothers,
yes,
if they did this, they would be held up as champions of, you know, the righteous, protecting of children. Whereas a father who isn't trying to run away forever, but resolve some issues, it is, to me, it just highlights how our court systems are not equal in terms of protection. But that being said, you know, you've said, you know, for 6 years, you've just wanted the abuse to stop. And now you are at that safety's risk with this person who's a thug, you know, and also the prospect of potentially spending time in jail. You know, what's been the toughest moment emotionally, and how do you keep going? You feel like, and again, I guess one more thing I'll say, do you feel like a stranger in a strange land, or have you assimilated into a new, you know, environment that you could live out potentially the rest of your life, or at least until your daughter's of legal age, if this can't get resolved? How do you, you know, what's the toughest emotionally, and what's sort of like your vision for the near future?
The toughest, it would be difficult to say. There's so many. I mean, there's a gag order on me. I've said since April 23 that I'm without legal advice. I'm too traumatized to really fully understand court papers and court orders. Again, the court don't care. I don't fully understand everything with the gag order. But what I do know, I don't know if I mentioned it earlier, is the mother, her solicitor, and the media companies broke the terms of the first publicity order and put things out on the internet that are still there. So that it's not only the Irish guy that I'm worried about. It could be anyone that I don't know. She may have, those stories could be attracting all sorts of people because, as you say, on the face of it, at first glance, you might say, what a terrible dad. And because the context is not out there, because they've taken down a website and they haven't published most of the judgments. So whatever is online, they've restricted it to stop the full story coming out. So I am worried on all sorts of levels there. So it's very hard to pick out the worst thing. You know, my daughter is upset that her house is gone. And it's just very hard. I mean, a lot of people flee abuse and they disappear. They don't have any interest in mediating or sharing parental time. And I've tried to fix things. I've tried to mediate and engage because I want my child to have both parents. But in doing that, I've been treated worse than if I had have disappeared. And I've said this to the court, but they don't care. I have been treated worse than a criminal. The 18 months I've been through with all these hearings and court orders and freezing orders and prison sentences. You know, most of it I've been kept from getting legal advice. In many ways, that's been more traumatic than it would be to go to jail. A mother contacted me and she said she didn't even like going to county court for a family court hearing because she found it so stressful. Now, she's a very highly intelligent woman, and she found it very, very, very stressful. Now, I've had to go to over a dozen high court hearings, and that I can't explain the stress of that, facing very high up barristers. And I'm trying to fix things and they're just kicking me all the time and sanctioning me. I mean, you would think that, hang on, let's not attack a parent because he's the main carer of the child. This is why, one of the reasons I never asked for sanctions against the mother, because she'd taken my child 3 hours away. At the point, she was the main carer, and it's like, well, why would I want to harm her? Okay, she's attacking me. Why would I want to harm her? Because it might affect her care of the child. But the courts don't care in this case. They just want to hammer me, and they don't know or don't care about how my child is. They've shown very little interest. The mother doesn't ask anymore. I sent some updates. She doesn't seem to care. All of those and many more would be the worst bits. It's hard to pick one. What's the future? I don't know. I've got nothing to go back to England for now except prison. And yet I'm still, even today, I've been talking to the mother's solicitor, trying to be constructive.
Well, you know, you've got a lot of real threats and a jail sentence looming.
Yeah.
And I'm certain that that has led to many sleepless nights worrying about yourself and your daughter. So, you know, the ability to maintain a level of positivity that you have, I'm certain has also led to an environment with your daughter where she feels love. And, you know, you certainly sound like a father that would literally and demonstrated would, you know, do anything for your child. So I certainly see that shining through and believe it.
Yeah.
What has your ex posts, like the ones you've pinned, they show you fighting and speaking the truth despite the gagging order. I know that you're active in, you know, the parents' rights community, et cetera, and bringing awareness to issues such as yours and, quite frankly, even mine. How has your community or the pushback helped you stay strong in all of this?
Well, I've met a lot of fantastic people. I started my podcast and my X account, in 2022. So it was long before the current circumstances came about, and throughout, you know, I've met really, I mean, it's just wonderful people that, you know, go through hell, but it doesn't damage them to the point where they're not nice people anymore. In fact, it probably makes them more empathetic and nice. And so yes, you meet some nasty people linked to the other party, and you meet some people that just don't want to be involved. But most people are very understanding, and it's surprising, really. You mentioned earlier it's not a gender thing, and it isn't. You know, abusers can be men or women, and it's actually the number of women who are supportive and seem to understand is actually very, really surprising to me. I have women who contact me through, just, you know, privately from the podcast. They don't come on the show, but they, you know, they're going through things or they want to be supportive, and that's good. And, obviously you and I go to a daily, there's a Spaces thing run by Bill, that's very good, and there's great people in there. So it has helped. And You wouldn't choose to go through this, but the number, you know, and I'm sure you found, I know you've spoken to a lot of people, and it is amazing, and it's surprising the number of people that go through hell, this sort of hell, but it's amazing to meet the people that you do, that you can help and they help you.
You know, I really, thanks. Thank you for that explanation, because, you know, there is so many hurting people out in the world today. And the one thing that I've really appreciated about X is, especially after Elon Musk took over,
yeah,
that I have been able to connect with people all over the world in similar situations, like yourself, Bill Colbert, like you mentioned, many others. And, you know, the honesty that people speak of when they're in a space is, yeah, you know, with other people who are like-minded or going through similar things, there's just a wonderful community and that support each other. And it seems like it truly is a small world. I only have a couple more questions,
yeah,
that, you know, and then we can wrap this up, because,
yeah,
you know, you've done a really wonderful job, I think, of explaining your situation. It's, you know, both similar and unique. And I think there's some important nuances in a lot of the things that you've said. And that is, you know, this is, you're not back in the UK for a real reason. That's quite important. That needs to be worked out. But as it stands right now, what is next for you legally, and how do you bring, and how do you hope that brings safety to you and your child?
Well, I don't know. We have a hearing in April, and I will try and be constructive, and I'll probably be slapped down again. That's in the UK. I believe the other party is going to sell my house and bring a legal case with the money out here. I offered to give her some money to pay for a legal case so that our daughter's inheritance wasn't lost, but she wanted the house gone. Now, I don't think that's great parenting, but yeah, you know, there you go. I wanted to just go back to another point. Yes, you asked about the future, and when I said, you know, we're going to have to stay, we may have to stay, you know, 9 years until my daughter is 16, and then at 16 she you know, she's an adult. I may have to stay there that long for her, and if I don't have a passport, I'll have to stay here for a lot longer than that. I'm not confident, you know, because something else may happen. A vigilante may show up, or something else may happen, you know. And I've said, well, what is the point? You know, why waste these years of our child's, you know, childhood? She's going to be growing up soon, you know. Let's just parent, you know. But she doesn't want to. So having thrown away the last 17 months where she could have been parenting in England, she seems content to throw away another year or two. At the end of that, it's very likely that one of us will have next to no contact with the child, either me or her. And I've said, I don't want that for either of us. You know, it's just pointless and not good for our child, but she doesn't care. Yes, I may have to stay here 9 or 10 years minimum, but something may happen where I end up in England in jail. I don't know what, and a lot of people said that we're fine here, but I don't take anything for granted. A vigilante could come along and try and snatch my child or harm me, and then the child will be taken back to England because I'm no longer around. I don't know. So I'm not confident on any level. So I just wanted to clear that up. The other, what was your last question? I'm sorry. Sorry, I do tend to ramble.
No. I think you really did a great job of answering, you know, the question. You know, it's all I want to say is, you know, everything that you've talked about for the past 3 hours has been so powerful. And I think maybe this is a good part to sort of wrap this up. It's almost hard to fathom yeah. that you could be facing, you know, this significant amount of time after all the work that you've done to try to do the right thing, in my view. Thank you for giving us your heart and your, you know, and your fight. I know a lot of parents listen to you, respect you, your voice, and we'll come away with a lot from you just sharing your story. So, you know, in closing, you know, what I'd like to say, you know, we've come to the end of a 3-hour journey, and I'm just overwhelmed with gratitude. You know, at Fair Parenting UK, thank you for trusting me with your story. A regular dad who's faced abuse, crime, and a system that's, you know, tired, tried to silence you, all the while fighting for your child's safety. Mm. Do you have any final words? A hope for peace or a calling to keep pushing forward?
Yeah, I mean, no, I think we've covered everything. Not everything, because it would last for a day. We could talk about everything, but I think the main issues are covered, yeah, and the concerns and the hopes and the fears for the future. And we spoke about trauma, we spoke about your case and the similarities and other parents. I think it's been a really good episode, and we're giving Joe Rogan a run for his money on the length of this one,
I think I told you I wanted to hit 3 hours, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely fine. It's great. Yeah.
And I wanted to be able, because here's the thing, your case is completely understandable in a long format podcast. And I know you're going to trim this part and trim out whatever you want. But, you know, I tried to at least allow you, I tried to do like, there's really two parts of your case. And if people really sort of need to look at, actually three parts. You know, they need to look at all of this, maybe four, quite frankly. Okay. They need to look at all of this in totality to go, you know, here's a dad who's trying to do the best for his child. And honestly, I can't say the same thing about your ex. I think that where her heart is certainly not one that is based on the concern of the child, but more about getting back at you and getting whatever she can.
Yeah.
So
thanks so much. I look forward to this episode coming out. And you did really, I really appreciate it of the great job you did in getting me to talk about my 6-year journey without bringing the trauma out. You managed to keep it light, and I really appreciate that.
Wow. You know, coming from you, that means a lot. I feel like I'm unfrozen caveman, you know, podcast temporary host for the day. So I really just appreciate you telling your story. What a powerful story. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to sit in your chair for a change and ask some questions. It's enlightening, to be sure. And I just hope the audience appreciates this podcast and what you were able to share with us. Thank you so much. I look forward to speaking with you again in the near future.
Thanks, Brendan. Really appreciate it. Bye. Take care.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, that's the end of episode 3, the last part of my story update. Thanks again to Brent for doing the interview. I don't know what the future is for me, but wherever you are on your parenting journey, best wishes and bye for now.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Please join us next time.